the dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
That first voice you heard was my wife, Sarita, singing Sunny with the late, great guitarist Joe Pass, Ella Fitzgerald's favorite guitarist. And the second voice you heard was that of one of the greatest, if not the greatest entertainer of the last century, Frank Sinatra, introducing yours truly on The Tonight Show, the voice you now hear. This is John Barber, host of John Barber's World, originating in Las Vegas, where it is now raining. It almost never rains here, so this must be Mother Nature's way of making the next guest you hear feel at home, because he almost never does interviews. Ordinarily, you know, at the top of my show, I like to make some comments about what's been going on the past couple of weeks in the news, but I'm going to forgo that to get to this internet treasure. He thinks he's lucky to still be with us after a very recent life-threatening rollover car crash. But believe me, we're the ones who are lucky to still have him to listen to. He is one of the internet's and the world's most successful and popular long-standing talk show hosts, one of the brightest and by far the fairest and most objective. My always listen to and must talk to friend and muse, and sometimes amusing straight man, Jeff Reds. Jeff, thank you so much for being here. I'm absolutely and totally honored and delighted.
John, I feel like I'm on the just been introduced by Frank Sinatra. Thank you for that. Well, that was extraordinary.
A former part-time employee. So my first question to you, Jeff, is how do you feel? What hurts most? You, your body after the accident, or your soul after knowing what's been happening to our once upon a time country deliberately? What hurts the most?
That's a good question. I honestly, the accident, to put it in the vernacular, just beat the hell out of me. The car went into the ditch at 60 miles an hour, a 5-foot deep ditch, and buried its nose in, and then vaulted head over heels, completely airborne, came down, crashed, rolled, spun. The car was utterly destroyed, and I don't know why I wasn't, but here we are. And then several days later, after I was released from the hospital, I got spinal meningitis from the bleeding in my brain. From the brain trauma, it went down my spinal column, and the blood itself is a terrible, terrible inflammatory agent when it gets in there. And there are three kinds of spinal meningitis: viral, bacterial, and aseptic. This is the aseptic variety, all just as deadly, all just as painful. And I can honestly tell you, I would not want to ever go through that much pain again. So I was back in the hospital a second time for 4 days, where they injected with an IV pump around the clock, antivirals, antibacterials, anti-inflammatories, morphine every 2 hours, just a real scene. So that said, what do I feel about the world, and does that hurt? You bet. You were a kid. Many of you listening were children and had the opportunity to grow up in a world that was kinder, gentler, more concerned with, I think, individuality by far than we'll ever see again. And we have now a terrible regime of genocide, death, the absolute war on being a proactive human being, a sentient being. They want subservience. They want reactive, drooling robots. And that's what they have designed. And they produce them by the millions in the school systems, which are government school, mind control, propaganda outlets. And it is it's
Jeff,
a sad thing. When you were a kid, we could go out and play all day, play until dusk, and we'd go home. We didn't have to be told to come home. We'd just go home at dusk and get cleaned up and have dinner, and now forget it. You see the young people, they don't play anymore. They don't run anymore. They waddle.
Not only did we play outside. The reason I played outside, I never wanted to go into the house, which was a very
That was a big part of it. Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you were going to go into the house, no matter what time of night or day it was, the door was always unlocked.
You bet. Yeah.
Anyway, this accident that you have, they say that statistically 90% of all the accidents happen within a mile or a half a mile of your home. How far away from you were the house, and were you on the highway, or were you turning into your property?
I was about 200 yards from turning into my driveway off a two-lane highway.
At 60 miles an hour?
Well, should be
driving an Amtrak train.
Speed limit was, the speed limit was 60, and I was probably a little below that. Just beginning to think about slowing down, you know, 200-300 yards before the driveway. On the right.
Two questions. And when you first started to flip, you were obviously conscious because perhaps you hadn't fallen asleep. If you were conscious, what was the first thought that went through your mind? And is it true? Does your life flash before your eyes when it looks like you're going to meet your maker?
I was, John, I wasn't aware of anything until almost 4 hours later, when I woke up in the ICU at the second hospital they had taken me to because of the nature of the injuries. CAT scans every 20 minutes or so to see about the bleeding in the brain and all of that. I was shut off. How or why, I don't know. I didn't fall asleep. I don't have strokes. I don't know what happened. All I know is what I was told by the firefighters and the Oregon State Police, that I drove off to the right about 3 feet, and then this ditch, because about 5 foot deep, 5 foot wide, big drainage ditch, and went just rocketing down in there and then rocketing right back up and out in the air, totally airborne. And I have no recollection of any of it.
Jeff, with this terrible pain that the meningitis must inflict on you, why would you still do your shows so religiously every night? I mean, You could get yourself a week off and get... You have wonderful guests on your show, and I'm sure they would be thrilled to volunteer one night a week so that you could rest and substitute host your show for you.
It may sound funny, but actually working makes me feel better. Being able
to... Well, good for you. That's terrific.
I feel like I have a gift of a chance to reach out to people, and I just don't feel right not doing that. And so it made me feel better, even though it was, the first few days were awful. I was very weak. My voice was weak. And you just do what you do. But I did feel good doing it, maybe on a spiritual level. I don't know. Hard to say.
Well, you've been doing it for 22 years, and you've been doing it superbly. There was a time when you lived here in Vegas and you were a prominent anchor person here.
Yeah.
And then you went to Santa Barbara, and then you moved up to the Northwest. So tell me why you came to... No, before you came to Las Vegas, what prompted you to come to Las Vegas? Where did you go to school? Where were you born? Did you have siblings? What was your home life like? Even though you described an iconic kind of idyllic America when you were a youth, a lot of us, though we lived in maybe an idyllic country, we didn't live idyllic personal lives. So what was yours like growing up?
You remember the Helms bakery trucks?
Oh, yes. Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
All right. Well, that was a big fun part of life. You know, little things. You heard that whistle and you knew what was coming, and that was a fun thing. It's too bad they lost it. I grew up in Los Angeles area, basically, and when I was 17, I moved up to Santa Barbara and eventually graduated from graduate school at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
Did you move because your parents moved, or did you move on your own?
I've been on my own since I was 11, financially. Your background and my background, as you know, are sadly similar in many ruthless and cruel ways. It's just the way life unfolded. So I was on my own, and I went up there because some of my friends had gone up there from the high school. And I wanted to be, you know, near them. That's all I had. So I went up and managed to rent a little house right on the edge of the ocean, right on the beach, right on a cliff. It was about 30, 40 foot tall off the beach. And it was an old, old house, so old that at night you could hear the termites, and they would actually keep you awake, crunching. True story. And every time that they would eat through the wood ceiling, the little termite droppings would start to drop, like little raindrops. And I would get up there on the chair with a hammer and pound a nail on the hole. That's the best way I could fix it. So I had a roof. It was an open beam type ceiling, 2x4s, and it was like paper they had eaten for 50, 60 years. And I had nails all over the place. People would come in and say, "Why are the nails in there?" And it was quite funny. And the wind and the rain, my God, when the storms would come off the ocean, back when they had storms in Southern California, it was just fabulous. The howling nature of it, and the house was so rickety and old, and it was wonderful. And I went to school and finished graduate school. And
is that when you decided to come to Vegas?
I started in radio. Because I was laying home listening to the UC Santa Barbara football game, and there were two idiot, imbecile announcers, and I walked over to the station the next day and said, "Listen, I'd like to apply for the job next year, and because this is, you're embarrassing yourself." And I had never done radio, never done anything before, and he said, "Okay, you got it, you got the job." So that's how I started in radio. From there, I went to the local television station in Santa Barbara, KEYT, as
on
their
the
sports
air.
Director.
On the air?
I started on, yeah, their sports director, right on the air. And
you were still a kid.
Yeah, I was 9 years old. and I went out.
In your early 20s.
I was there, and I went out, I don't remember. I went out from there and became a news reporter, and I covered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I covered all the auto crashes, airplane crashes, you name it, I was there. And I'd go into burning buildings with the firefighters. They respected me.
You sound
me.
Like Ben Heck, the Cub reporter, when he started in Chicago. Then what brought you to Vegas?
The job in Santa Barbara, after 3 years, kind of came to an end. I had done as much as I could do, and the owner of the Las Vegas ABC station, KTNV, invited me over and offered me a job. So I went there, and I went to Reno after that and several other places. But that's how I got to Las Vegas. I worked there for 2.5 years. I knew it was time to leave when I got off work at midnight and looked up at the old temperature gauge on the Sahara, and it said 114. Jeez, that's not, there's something wrong here. So anyway, that's how I got to Las Vegas, and I had a lot of fun. I didn't gamble one nickel when I was there. Got to meet some wonderful people. My father ended up coming over there and working for Howard Hughes.
Doing what?
He was the editor of the Howard Hughes in-house corporate, as you will, magazine for all the employees.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and he got to be friends with a friend of mine, Gary. I won't mention his last name, but he was the public relations director of the Desert Inn. And this is very shortly after, or at the same time, Johnny Roselli was killed and put in that 55-gallon drum in, I guess, Miami Bay or somewhere.
Yeah.
And my father looked like Johnny Roselli. He had white hair and very distinguished looking. And he and Gary would have lunch at the DI often. And my dad was perplexed. He said people would come by and they'd stop and they'd do a double take and they'd look at him and they'd look at him again. And he finally asked Gary, he says, what the hell are they doing? And Gary said, this is the booth that Johnny Roselli had as his own booth. And you look almost like you could be a twin.
Oh, my gosh. How interesting. And then did you move back to Santa Barbara or did you move up to the Northwest?
Let's see. I went back to Santa Barbara and then to Reno as the news director and anchorman at the NBC station up there, which was owned at the time by, you remember the Cord automobile?
Oh, absolutely.
It was owned by Charlie Cord, the son of Mr. Cord. And he was elderly at the time, or older, and I worked up there for several years. That was very nice, too. Unfortunately,
you've been doing this for 22 years, and the Internet was almost non-existent when you decided to do what it is that you do. What compelled you to do it, and why did you do it, and did you think you ever had a chance of either succeeding or making a living at it so you could support yourself?
Well, I don't think like that. I've always thought, and I think you may be similar, I've always thought that given the physical and mental tools that I was born with, I could do anything I wanted. And I quit television news, turning down a very, very big job up in Portland, and went to the local Santa Barbara, the biggest station in Santa Barbara, and asked them if they had any time available that I could buy, an hour or two, and it turned out that they did, and I bought 2 hours on Sundays and began to do this talk show. I just did it. I didn't plan it. I didn't rehearse it. I knew there was a lot of information out there.
How did you pay for it if you had to buy it?
It was pretty cheap. It wasn't very much. I don't remember what I was doing to earn money then, honestly. I had the wherewithal to buy the time, so I did it. And I began to do the program because this is just when David Icke was beginning to appear and just when people were beginning to understand the nature of the conspiracy that is running the world and running the country. And I realized this news, this kind of information, would never go on television. And so I quit television and stayed away for a year or two, and then realized, I listened to a talk show one day and realized that people who listen to talk radio are using their minds. They want to know. They're interested. They're not staring and drooling and reacting at television. And then there's some good television. But generally speaking, talk radio at that time was clearly the only venue by which you could bring information to people who would care about it and who might process it to their betterment. And that's what pushed me into it.
And did you originate it in the Northwest where you moved, and why did you move there?
I worked in Santa Barbara at this particular station. Within 6 months or so, people were telling me that I needed to send a tape out to the Premier Radio Network, which is now Clear Channel owned. And I did send a tape to them. And they called me the very day they got the tape and said, when can you come down here to L.A.? It was about an hour and a half away. And I went down, and they said, we've been looking for you for 2.5 years to go up against Art Bell. And I was sort of stunned, and I said, you know, you're kidding. No, you're exactly what we want. And they signed me to a big contract, 5-year contract, and I went to work for them. And they were going to literally put me on. Henry Winkler was part of this deal that he was involved with it with me and with Premier. And they were going to put me on the radio and the television, like Howard Stern. They were going to put on the Sci-Fi Channel, the Jeff Rentz program, and I would do it on television and on radio. And that was really going to be fun. because I had a big television background and they knew I could do it. So they began to produce the whole operation. They hired somebody from Paramount to build the set, and I told them I would not move to L.A. So they said, okay, we'll build it in Santa Barbara. And all these plans were moving ahead very, very nicely. And then one day, the vice president of Premier Radio called me up, and he said, well, I've got good news and I've got bad news. This is all true. No one's ever heard this before. And I said, well, let's have the good news. He said, well, we've just been bought by a company called J-Corp, which became Clear Channel, for $87 million. I said, well, God, congratulations. You're rich. You deserve it. You created Premier Radio Networks, you guys, three of them. And I said, you all deserved it. I said, what's the bad news? He said, well, they also bought the talk radio network so they could get Art Bell and bring him in here. I said, that's wonderful. I'm on 7 to 10. He's on 10 to 3. You'll own the night. You'll do really well. And he said, I know that. You know that. I just got back from Chicago, and the word is Bell will not come to work here if you're here.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, you know what? That sounds sort of similar. And tell me if my instincts are right. When I first started to hear you, it was about 10 or 12 years ago. And it was your voice that caught me. I mean, Art Bell had a really nice voice, really mm-hmm. good radio voice, Orson right. Welles kind of voice. But your voice... it's a more youthful sound. It's a more pleasant and comfortable sound. So I was enamored by that. And then I got locked in with a lot of these great guests that you had. So I listened, and I think you were on Genesis. And it was the same network that Art Bell was on?
No, that was Alex Jones was on Genesis.
Oh, not Art Bell. Alex Jones. And you were the only reason I listened to that. Once in a while, I'd listen to Alex Jones, you know, but even if I agree with somebody, I hate it when they yell at me. They think it's volume, the louder you speak, the more truth you impart, when all you have to do is just whisper the facts, so I couldn't listen to them. But I loved you, and I watched you and listened to you, and then I used to catch you on a local radio station here in Las Vegas. Then all of a sudden, you disappeared. Now, was that similar to the Art Bell situation at Clear Channel?
No, that was a question of finances. I was buying the time on it, and just got to a point where I couldn't continue paying that much money for the time. I had a wonderful audience, so you're quite right. Really nice people, and that was it. Back to the Bell thing, and I'm not knocking Art. He just didn't want anything to do with me. He, for whatever reason, he would not be on the same channel with me. And this was told to me by people right at the top, and I was told that because of that, the board in Chicago has decided that you're going to be let go at the end of the first year of your multi-year contract. I had a five-year contract. So that let me go, so to speak, into the world of independent radio. And I went freelance, and I would go from little network to little network, and I was at three or four or five of them. Then I ended up at GCN, and after 3 years there, I realized that I had 196 stations.
I know you did.
They would not.
Huge.
They would not do anything to promote me at all. It was obvious that I had been brought in there to be kept in a box where I wouldn't be able to succeed and continue to grow. And so I left, basically, under some odd circumstances, but I did leave. And then I started my own network, so I would never have to work for anyone anymore. And I have the Rents Radio Network now. It's rentsradio.com. And I have some unusual hosts, and there are more coming on. So I was able to have freedom at last to do what I wanted. And that opened the door, of course, for multiple attacks on me, which have never stopped. But that's the way it is when you challenge the powers that be and try to bring information that they're not comfortable with into the light of day so people could have a chance to think about it.
You talked about the Helms truck, and what a great sound it was. Two things. The other night, I watched a movie that I didn't watch earlier when it came out. It was directed and co-written by George Clooney, and it was called Good Night and Good Luck. It was the story of Edward R. Murrow and his challenge of Senator McCarthy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the film, but I would highly recommend. And I would highly, highly recommend it because it's really well documented and it's very well done. And they did it smartly in black and white, which is what Murrow did on television. But I must tell you, Jeff, I almost cried watching the movie because I remember all those wonderful journalists and the journalistic standards of the 50s and Edward R. Murrow doing Harvest of Shame and Edward R. Murrow doing this. He only did this person to person because he got a great audience so that he could do the news. But it was heartbreaking. I mean, absolutely and totally heartbreaking. Now, there was a time in America that ended with the death of John Kennedy when one could be extremely critical of the Israeli government, what the Israelis were doing not only to Palestine, but probably doing to a lot of countries around the world. There was a time you could be critical of them when you would not be called an anti-Semite.
Right.
And it seems today that you are the only one still carrying that flag, which is critical of Zionism and critical of the Israeli government, which is entirely separate from the Israeli people.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. It hasn't come without great cost and great heartache at times. I've been set up and put through a lot of very difficult things on a personal level because of that. It's been difficult. I ended up, you asked me earlier, how did I end up in the Northwest?
Yes.
I have a daughter. She's in her 20s now. And when she was very little, I had brought her up here on a vacation. And I remembered how wonderful it was. And when it became time to leave Santa Barbara, I had just been signed by the talk radio network, Roy Masters and Mark Masters, very, very fine people. Jewish, by the way, wonderful people. And they signed me to a 5-year contract, which brought me up up to this area. So that's how I got up here.
Well, speaking of your daughter, which means she must have had a mother, which means you must have had a wife.
Not for long.
That's funny, because when I had Kitty Kelly on a few weeks ago, Kitty got married when she was 50. And I asked her, was this her first marriage? She said no, but it was the best. That she had more bestsellers than she did husbands. So this is kind of a convoluted question, but I go back to the sound of your voice. I don't know how old you are, but you sound like you could be 26 or 27 or 28. You have this wonderful boyish quality about your voice, but you also have this gentle quality when you deal with even controversial guests, which I must tell you is probably extremely appealing to women. And I am sure there have been a lot of them who have been profoundly attracted to you. So I'm going to take a break now. And when we come back, I want you to tell me some wives' stories. Okay. We'll be right back with the very best host on the internet, Jeff Renz.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific and I'd say historic film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio www.bbsradio.com.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
Dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
I'd like to thank George Knapp, the Sunday host of Coast to Coast, for that terrific unsolicited review of our documentary, The Last Word on the Assassination. You can get it at Amazon, as well as read dozens of other terrific unsolicited reviews, some from some very famous people. Also, while you're up there, for just a couple of bucks, you might want to pick up John Barber's Uncensored Facebook, Volume 1, with a terrific intro by Richard Belzer. You can open it any place, I promise you, and find something to make you laugh or think or upset you. It's sort of chicken soup for the funny bone. We're back now with the very best talk show host for 22 years on the internet, Jeff Rich. Yes, okay. Two questions. First of all, that wonderful boyish quality that you have, which really is audio Gary Cooper. That's exactly what you would look like. Okay, but what you look like is I see this wonderful picture of you, as I said, I don't know how old you are, and you have this long hair that Bruce Jenner would envy.
Huh. That's funny.
And that Bruce is probably trying to grow. So why the long hair? Tell me that first.
Oh, that's easy.
Okay, tell me that, and then get to the business of the wives and your experiences with the women. And how many times have you been married?
Oh, God. Okay. The hair is 100% real. And that is a slightly older picture. But it's all real. There is something good to be said about Chinese goods in Walmart. Now, I didn't say it was my hair. I said it was real hair. No, it is. It's all my hair. And the reason I stopped cutting it was because I left television and no longer had to keep it short. And I felt that somehow, if God or whomever wanted us to have shorter hair, it would be shorter. And it is actually now known that hair, long hair, is a tactile sensory organ and has a place in the bigger scheme of your relationship to your physical environment. And you look it up on the internet, and you'll find it. Long hair is good. So
now, did you learn this first, or had you been a fan of those Robin Hood movies and King Arthur's knights?
Well, Errol Flynn, yeah.
Or because you look good with long hair?
I felt no. Here's someone told me in college, and this is before I had to start cutting it. And I had longer hair in college. You know, the Beatles and so forth. We all have our own natural markings, our own individual look, appearance, unique presentation. If we cut our hair, we lose that. It's just the way I look. That's my look. That's me. And I didn't want to in any way abrade it or curtail it, so I just let it grow. And I found something else out. You don't need to be bald. One of the worst things you can do as a man is cut your hair short and part it and never touch it. Leave it alone all day. If you brush your hair, pull on it, back comb it, scrub it with a towel, rub it, if you stimulate the hair follicles and roots, it's my belief that baldness, in many cases, will never occur. I have no hairline recession. I have no bald spots, nothing. It's all solid and as thick as it was when I was 20.
Jeff, that makes perfect sense. It's the same with your teeth. If you don't chew, they loosen and fall out.
That's exactly right.
So, okay, now let's get to the wives. How many have you had?
And oh, hair is much more
fun. First
of
all, since you brought up your daughter, let's talk about her mother and how long she was Mrs. Rentz before she became an ex.
Oh, she was never Mrs. Rentz. She left, and thank God she did. She left when my daughter was 16 months, unweaned, never had been able to sleep in her own little bed, nothing, slept with her mother. It was just not a good situation. I married her because she was very intelligent. She could do the New York Times crossword puzzle in about 20 minutes, and I thought that was pretty neat. Well, intelligence, kindness, gentleness, grace, and all the rest of it don't necessarily go hand in hand at all. And
a person's intelligence has nothing to do with their emotional makeup.
Thank you. You've said it perfectly. So have I been married 9 times, like some of the disinformation, horrible attacks on me, which started in 2012, 2013, 2014.
In like
just
Flynn,
horrible.
Like Rentz.
Yeah, yeah. No, not true at all.
Okay.
There
get
were
to the truth.
There were 6, and they were not marriages in churches like you would think. One I did as a trying to save a woman who literally was sliding into prostitution and methamphetamine use. So I took her into a Las Vegas wedding chapel and tried to make her feel like she had something in life to relate to, a wedding, a home, a family, whatever. That failed. So that was one marriage. Now, that doesn't really count in my book. There are lots of people who live together for years who are never married, but I call that a marriage. So you can look at it any way you want. Another one was to keep out of the military, frankly, is the dread. There was another one who contacted me most recently who led this attack on me, this horrible internet attack, who we believe may well have been sent in here. Unbeknownst to her, she does have severe multiple personality disorder. She admitted once to having over 100 personalities. These are all variations. They're different. They're not black and white different, but they're variants. And she was treated by a psychiatrist for nearly 2 years for this condition. And she said that she studied me for 3 years before she ever reached out. Now, that's a very strange thing in and of itself. She knew more about me than I did when she sent this email that I finally saw. And one thing led to another, and she came out, and it is a major Hollywood motion picture. It turned out that she began this...
Starring Glenn Close.
Thank you. Fatal Attraction times 10.
You were a pushover.
I was pushover.
You were. You were an absolute pushover. And you know, it's not highly unlikely, because of the nature of some of the subjects that you cover on your show, that you don't hear anywhere else. I mean, I hear nowhere else, first of all, about primary water, which I only hear from you and your network. I hear almost nothing about Fukushima, except for the time that I had that Dr. Caldicott on the show.
Yeah,
it's all
wonderful.
On your show. Yeah. And it's not unlikely, Jeff, that the government or whoever is out there to somehow damage you or censor you, knowing your history with women and the fact that you are vulnerable because you're a kind person, it's probably not unlikely that you were set up.
I honestly, John, I don't like to jump to conclusions like that. I study them. I do believe that to be the case in this last instance because of the viciousness of the attacks that this person launched on me on the internet that had very little basis in reality or truth. They were lies and lies of omission, flat-out lies, and I don't blame her because I don't think she knew what she was doing. You have a 100 or 200 or 300 personality variants, and she was raped as a little girl terribly at 5, and that's how they do it. Every time a child is raped, male or female, they develop a variant personality, because what is happening to them is so horrific, and the cult or the evil ones maintain control of these people for their lives, the rest of their lives. And all they have to do is basically pick up the phone, it's this simple, and speak a code word, whatever, circus, whatever it is. And the person will go into an altered state and can be programmed and told what to do.
There have been a couple of movies about that.
That's correct. That those are not fiction. Those are real movies. They're telling real truths.
Well, you said that sometimes she didn't know what she was doing, so I have to ask you, and sorry to ask you, but there's no other way to ask you but ask you, is could I very, very briefly mention my brief email encounter with this lady?
Of course. Yeah, she bends no effort to reach out and corrupt, try to intimidate and drive people away. That was her effort to destroy me.
Yes, about 3 or 4 months ago, I hadn't heard from you, and I was concerned about you. And I wrote you a couple of emails, and you're always very quick to respond.
Yeah,
and
I never
got
it.
And what I got back, first of all, was a really vicious email telling me what a depraved and degenerate old man I was. And it was just awful.
Oh,
and,
God.
And I said to my wife, Jeff did not write this. This was written by Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction. So I tried to get you again and send another email, and it came back even more vile than that. And so I had no recourse but to call one of your friends, your webmaster, who is brilliant, by the way. All the people that work with you are absolutely brilliant. And
yeah.
Anyway, he said that the emails were being intercepted by her, and
yeah.
that she was writing them and you weren't getting
yeah.
them. So I had no choice but to call you because I wouldn't want to call you. And, oh, my God, you work 20 hours a day, and I didn't want to disturb you.
Oh,
so
it's okay.
I was see, so...
John, she hacked into my email. She's hacked into my home telephone service and set up a call rejection feature. And filled it with about 30 different people, clients, guests, sponsors, key people, trying to damage me. They couldn't call me. They would phone and they would say a recording that the person with this number is no longer taking calls. Call rejection. She hacked into my YouTube channel, and she would go into rages, and she would literally go in there and just wreak havoc. She erased my entire YouTube channel, almost 3 million views, in 30 seconds. Gone. Just gone. She erased my entire internet email address book of 19 years. Gone. Just gone.
Did she have anything to do with this accident?
I don't know the answer to that. I have been... Look, one of the greatest secrets in American cultural society is that men are macho and women are supposed to be weak, and that women are retiring and they'll go cry. And no, men are beaten by women routinely and regularly, terribly, and it's happened to me. I don't hit women back.
Women are responsible for 50% of spousal abuse.
Okay, I believe it. Yeah, I've come very close to being beaten to death in ways that relate to driving, being beaten in a car, steering wheels grabbed, ignition keys grabbed, trying to crash the car at 60, 70 miles an hour. These are all true. If I were to tell my story, and it's the truth, it would be, people wouldn't believe it. It would be that much. And
where is this lady now?
About 20 minutes away.
Locked
and
up?
She's gone into her latest, she goes quiet, she goes silent, and doesn't talk. And it's, you know, the sad thing is, John, here's somebody with 100-plus personalities. Some of them are very, very nice. And I'm the dummy who always believes that goodness and kindness can bring the light out of the darkness and bring the good ones out. And unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way.
You're a born caregiver, and that's why you're such a good talk show host. When you had your accident, who was there to take care of you? And then before you answer that, you're a very independent person. You're an independent businessman. Did you carry sufficient health insurance to cover the treatment that you had at both hospitals?
State Farm insurance.
And they covered it?
They covered most of it. I'm just beginning to get a deluge of bills. I don't know. I don't even want to look at them. But there will be a sizable expense because of the amount of care and two hospitalizations. It was not a lot of fun. And
how much? The total cost?
Don't know yet.
Well, it is criminal in America that has to happen. You know.
Oh, I agree.
It's totally, totally.
Couldn't
criminal.
Agree more. This country has more than enough money to provide first-class medical care for all of its citizens. We should have it. It is a God-given birthright that we are being denied.
When you got home, who was there to help take care of you? Was your daughter there?
No. Unfortunately, my daughter doesn't like this particular woman who launched the attack on me on the Internet, which was just heinous. My daughter didn't come near. She didn't even come to see me in the hospital, which was obviously heartbreaking for me for a variety of reasons, because I raised her by myself. I fought in court for 16 years to keep her mother away from her because I didn't think her mother was a fit mother, and I still don't, and I never will, and there's a lot more to that story than we'll go into. But I was basically left alone in the house. This woman said she would be there, check in on me, stay there. I was not to be left alone. She left me completely alone to die. She didn't care. And this goes back to other instances that this person, unbeknownst to her, I do believe this. I've been poisoned. I've been tried to be kicked out of a raft in the middle of a raging river. I would have drowned in moments. It's something going on. I don't know what it is. When I bring these things up to her, there's just denial, and you're lying, you're crazy, that never happened. Now, is it that she's so compartmentalized with all these personalities that she doesn't know, or is she lying? I don't know, and I'll never know. And I will tell you right now, I'm not ashamed of it, there are parts of her personalities, if you will, that I very much like, and I ignore the rest of it. I am a provider. I believe in forgiveness, and I'm old-fashioned that way. And most people say, "What the hell are you doing with a crazy woman?" And you know, she's going to kill you. And I said, "Well, she's tried several times and has failed, so maybe it's not my time." I don't know.
Sounds a lot like F. Scott Fitzgerald's wife, Zelda, because
Zelda, because
he felt he couldn't function as a writer if he wasn't around Zelda, who drove him absolutely nuts and used to beat him up. So,
well, that's a funny thing, because she's gone dark, silent, no contact for the last 5 or 6 days, and you know, whether it's the Stockholm syndrome where you begin to identify with your quote captors, I don't know, but you know, I miss even if it's a deeply flawed and sadly and tragically corrupted soul, I miss the routine. Okay.
And, oh, my goodness.
It's difficult.
So are you home alone now by yourself?
Yes, I live completely alone. Yes.
Well, then, but your medication, do you have? I know you probably resist taking any kind of pain pills or anything like that, but there must be something that you have to be taking that helps sustain you while you're recovering.
John, I've said this before, and I again, have no problem with it. My right leg was severely injured at the university in a basketball game, and I've had 4 surgeries. It was supposed to be the knee was supposed to be replaced over 20 years ago now, and I do have pain pills because I literally cannot walk without excruciating pain. So I take occasionally Tylenol, codeine number 3s, which are very common, and I take a very small amount, and I'm just honest, of Xanax 0.25 with it, because somehow the two working together dull the pain, dull the anxiety and angst of the pain, and I'm able to function. So I don't do it all the time, but I do it, and I medicate myself on an as-needed basis. My doctor has been my doctor for 14 years. He said he has never seen anyone who is so strict and dedicated and honors the protocol that he has prescribed. I don't ask for more. I don't ask for more strength in the prescription. I stay exactly where I was originally prescribed and never increase it.
Well, you know, just the sound of your voice, Jeff, makes you sound as though you're extremely healthy, both physically and emotionally. Now, being alone, you may have sit around and have time to reflect when you're not getting ready to put on your show or to read those thousands of articles that you read, have to read and edit to put up in your site.
Yeah.
When you look back, if you ever look back, at the kid you were when you were 7 or 8 or 9, do you recognize him?
I think I recognize the discipline and structure that I put around myself. If I didn't have a structure, you had a structure. We had horrible homes. We would get out of our homes, and we had certainly imaginations, and we were able to do things that I think made us feel somewhat complete as children.
Could you ever imagine, let's say 15 or 20 years ago when you started doing this, or just before you started doing it, could you ever imagine being where you are today as one of the leading personalities on the internet and living up there in the Northwest? Could you ever imagine that that would have happened to you?
Not really. I do. You know what I do, John? I do the best I can at whatever I'm doing, and that's it. And it happened that I was able to communicate. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy learning, and I taught high school for 2 years and then fled because they're gone, most of them. And talk radio, first of all, no one can talk back to you because I don't take calls. But secondly, I think that they're there because they want to be there, and that's a real blessing for me and for the program. So it's
very,
very encouraging.
Do you in any way believe in predestiny?
Yes, I do. I do.
I do. And how long have you believed in predestiny?
Since I was very little. I had some very strange man come to the high school I went at. Very tall man with very thin features. Thin mouth, thin little eyes, about 6'3", very strange man. And he asked if I could come down and be interviewed by him. And the office called me in, and I went down, and I don't know how long I was in there with him in a room, maybe 2 hours. And he asked me many, many questions. And the final question he asked me, this is a long interview. I was 12 years old.
Wow.
He said, what do you want to be remembered for? And I said, without hesitation, someone who tried his best.
Oh, how wonderful. You know, Robert Frost's tombstone, he said, he wanted this inscription on his tombstone, and I don't know whether they put it on or not. He says, Dear God, please forgive all the little jokes I've played on thee, and I will forgive the great big one you played on me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, now, what do you feel was maybe the most fortunate time in your life where something happened that changed the direction of your life into a better direction, the direction where you ended up? Was that not getting the job in the same network with Art Bell, do you think?
Yes. When one door closes, another door opens. I've never felt sorry for myself when bad things have happened, and God knows there have been many of them. We've both been through a smooth ride, but we all get to where we need to get to if we just keep trying and believing in ourselves that we will, if we try, get to where we're supposed to be. And I've always felt that, and it seems to have worked out. I knew, when that man at the who came down from UFC to interview me at the high school said, what do you see yourself doing later in life? And I said again, I was 12, without hesitation, helping a lot of people understand what the world is really like. I just never thought about it before, and it just
Well, you know
out.
What, Jeff? That probably is a thought that a lot of young people have, and it's somehow drilled out of them. I mean, Mickey Rooney said that years ago to me, that every child is creative, and it's knocked out of them. I remember my son was in a gifted students program at Walter Reed High School. It was the only high school, one of the few high schools in America where you had teachers for the same 3 years where you were taught college courses. And my son was so impressed with one of the teachers, he came home and said he wanted to be a teacher. And anything my son wanted to do would be fine. But I knew that teachers should be paid $100,000 a year because they're like substitute parents in America, okay?
Yeah.
But I didn't want to discourage my son. I said to him, son, if you become a teacher, you can teach 33 or 34 kids.
You which got would it.
But if you get into television or radio, you can teach 30 million people.
That's so right. That's
fortunately,
right.
I didn't talk him out of it, and he sort of saw the light. Now, where do you see yourself? Do you see yourself doing something more and above, which is an extension of what you're doing now?
I can't physically do any more than I'm doing. I'm working at optimum output every day. I would like very much to be able to find a mate and be happy. That's what I can tell you in all candor, which I've never said to anyone. And I don't know if that'll ever happen. But I've got 5 wonderful acres, which I've spent 14 years turning into a little Disneyland. I put in a train that you ride. I've got waterfalls and ponds, and just it's gorgeous, tall pine trees. And I'm very, very blessed, but it hasn't come without a price.
Yeah, well, I must tell you, Jeff, I would say this might have been a 60-minute commercial for a wife, because I'm telling you, a lot of women will be want to be in touch with a man like yourself. And first of all, before I thank you, I must apologize to the many people who have gone online to ask Jeff a question, callers who want to call in and talk to Jeff. I'm always after Jeff to open his phones because there's so many bright people out there who have better questions often than the hosts and more information sometimes than the hosts. But he says when you're engaged in an interesting conversation, you don't want to interrupt it. I didn't want to interrupt it because he is an absolute and total treasure. I apologize to you folks out there.
Well, please, John, if you'd like, because we're such friends and I respect you so much, I will come back another time and we can do this if you'd like.
Oh, that would be fabulous. We'll do nothing but take phone calls because I got people up here in Australia, all around the world who want to talk to you, and I can't let them on the air. Jeff, thank you so much.
John,
I just love talking to you.
Thank you. I must say, and I don't know how much time we have, but I got to get it in quickly. You are a 24-carat diamond in this field, a very difficult field. You are a true world treasure, and I honor every moment that I get to spend with you. It's always a joy, and it always leaves me feeling much the better for it.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much, and I'll be talking to you again on Friday, I hope.
Okay, John. You just say the time, and if there are any nice women out there, I love children, and feel free to contact me through my webmaster, rentswebmaster@gmail.com. I'm not being facetious, but following up on your little line,
it's
always fun. I love to share. You know, I love to share, and that's one thing I really like to do.
Well, thank you for sharing your life and time with me, Jeff, and I'll talk to you Friday night at 9 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good night, Jeff.
Thanks, John.
And good night, you all. Talk to you in a couple of weeks when our guest will be one of the brightest men in America, Chris Hedges. Good night, all.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.